All right, a couple of lost stories here today, including one just breaking right now. And for that, we go to Rich Lenkoff, who's a partner at Bryce Downey and Lenkoff, and you co-host The Legal Face-Off on WGNRadio.com. Rich, as always, good to talk with you, my friend.
Hey, John, it's a busy morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, not to put you on the spot, but I've just seen across the wires the Justice Department suing the state of Georgia over their voting legislation that they passed a couple months back. Obviously, we're still learning the specifics of the lawsuit, and you know, we could go back and forth on the Georgia laws, but generally speaking, I'm just kind of curious. The federal government, I guess, obviously has standing to bring lawsuits against state governments for laws they pass. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yeah, it's a great question, John, because you know, this is a state issue, and typically that would be decided, you know, the constitutionality of that would be decided by the state. But it's a really good question, because why would the federal DOJ get involved? Well, Merrick Garland just got done, I was watching him, say that the Department of Justice is suing the state of Georgia because they violated Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which is, of course, a federal statute. So that's how the federal government is getting involved. They're saying that the recent changes to Georgia's election laws were enacted with the purpose of denying or abridging the right of black Georgians to vote on account of their race or color. And again, that violates the federal statute. So it's always important to ask why the federal government would be involved with a state issue, but that's why.
Yeah, so it's not like the federal government can just come into any state and say, we don't like your law. It has to be in violation of some federal law. And in this case, the
Correct.
Department of Justice says that they have met that threshold. We'll have to wait and see. How does that play out? Does that just go through federal courts immediately then?
Yeah, you know, it goes through the regular process of federal court. You know, it won't get obviously decided quickly.
Yeah.
There will be a response from the state. The state attorney general will handle that, and then it will proceed in due course. But, you know, Merrick Garland said today that we are going to pursue these issues when we see them. So we're seeing a very active Department of Justice under the Biden administration.
Right. And you would imagine, I don't know if they'd go after a couple states at once, but let's say they have success in court against Georgia, perhaps some of these other state legislatures that are or are about to pass new laws, that could be a harbinger of more lawsuits to come potentially.
Exactly. And, you know, the degree to which this lawsuit dissuades other states from potentially taking similar action is important. So that's also an important goal of Merrick Garland here.
Rich, I was just excited I got to use the word harbinger with you. I feel like that was really smart of me. So I just had the thesaurus up when I did that. Rich, pivoting a bit, today we're going to find out how long Derek Chauvin is assigned to be in prison. What's the, I don't want to ask you to prognosticate it, but like, what are we looking at for a range here?
Well, the range is 40 years is the maximum in Minnesota for second-degree murder. State sentencing guidelines, John, recommend 12 to 15 years for someone like Chauvin who has no prior felony convictions, but prosecutors are seeking a 30-year sentence. So somewhere, you know, the easy answer is, of course, somewhere in between, but I expect, given the notoriety of Chauvin, and, you know, this is obviously a huge case, he will get a significant amount of time. I and most other legal analysts expect somewhere north of 20 years, probably not the entire 30 years, because he does, in fact, have no prior record. But what's really important here, and your listeners might remember, is the judge in this case, who will ultimately decide, Peter Cahill, accepted the state's argument that there are aggravating factors in this case that warrant a harsher sentence. And there's four factors, and the two most important ones are that he acted with others in committing a felony, and that children were present, and those are most likely to aggravate the sentence in this case.
Yeah, it's got to be hard for a judge. I don't envy that position because, yeah, you want to take in consideration priors and whether there were them, but then there's that videotape. Does the judge look at the intent, the video evidence, or is it more based on, you know, certain stipulations and guidelines? I guess what I'm saying is, can he take the evidence that was used by prosecutors to help form his opinion on how, quote unquote, heinous the crime was?
Yeah, for sure. The judge has a lot of leeway. And again, the other two factors I did not mention are that he egregiously abused his power in the commission of this murder, and also that he treated Mr. Floyd with particular cruelty. So exactly to your point, the judge will consider all of the evidence, including the video. And, you know, it's inescapable. It's now been decided by a jury what he did. So the fact that he was nonchalant in, you know, his hands in his pocket and didn't help him and continued to have his you know, knee on his neck. I mean, those are all incredibly important factors in sentencing.
All right, so that'll be 1:30 when we learn that sentence. And, of course, like any situation, or at least most situations, is there good behavior? I mean, he could get assigned, let's say, 20, but you can get two-thirds or a third less of that time for good behavior. He'll be entitled to that as well.
Yeah, I mean, that is possible, although in this case, it is likely that, again, he will have to face a great majority of his sentence because of the other factors that we talked about. Those are aggravating factors. So, okay. Yeah, he'll be spending a considerable amount of time in jail.
All right, we'll wait and see till 1:30 what the official time is. Anna DeVlantes will have that for you, sure, as well. Let's talk about the parking meters. This will never die, this story, of course. And just to recap, 2009, former Mayor Daley allowing a firm to get 75 years, essentially, to run the parking meters for $1.16 billion. I don't know why I'm explaining this. Every Chicagoan or new area person knows this story. But now there's a class action lawsuit against the company and their monopoly, and they're seeking to have this broken up. Do you know much about this case?
Yeah, the complaint was filed this week in federal court here in Chicago, and it says that the deal with Chicago has brought, of course, increased parking rates and restrictions on other forms of travel. It also has alleged that the deal unreasonably locked in, you know, consumers and parkers, I guess, to a deal that doesn't keep up with technology for 75 years. I guess what interested me, John, is the fact that the city wasn't named as a defendant.
Right.
I mean, you're suing, to me, it's, you know, you're suing a private company for making a deal that has been a great deal for them. You know, what's the law against that? I mean, the fact that it, you know, alleges a monopoly, I think, is a little silly. Inherently, right? I mean, parking meters are a little bit of a monopoly. There might be other competitors, but they were free to seek the same deal. The city engaged in a business deal with this company. They were fully represented, and they made a deal that turns out to be incredibly lucrative for the company. I mean, I think of the 62 years are left in the lease, and they've already made back their $1.16 billion investment plus a profit of $500 million. And there's, you know, 62 years left. That might suck, right? That might suck for us as consumers, but it's a great deal for this private company. And if you want to sue anyone, sue the city for making a bad deal. That might have some legs, but to me, this lawsuit is fairly, not meritorious.
Can you sue the government like that, for your local government, for making a decision? Do they have some sort of immunity against that?
There is some governmental immunity. I mean, they have certainly the power and authority to make deals as they see fit. I mean, you might allege that they committed fraud or something, but yeah, I mean, generally you don't see those kind of lawsuits. That's why they didn't name them. But yeah, again, to me, you can sue anyone for anything, as we often see. But to me, this doesn't seem like a monopoly. It seems like a private company that made a great deal that people might not like, and it's a 75-year deal, but we're locked into it.
Yeah. I was wondering, I'm sure this didn't happen, but when I read the article in the Chicago Tribune, they did a great write-up on it. I was like, did the city just find three random people that were parking that day and be like, hey, get together and do this lawsuit. You might save us from this deal.
I mean, you would think that, you know, a basic economic analysis would have determined. It's not like we're 30 or 40 years down the road. We're only 13 years into the deal, and it's already... There's already a huge profit for the company. So, yeah, it doesn't seem like the wisest economic deal for the city.
I should have made a bid on that. I could have come up with something.
Exactly.
All right, Rich, thanks for breaking these all down for us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Rich Lenkoff, partner at Bryce Downey and Lenkoff, and co-host of Legal Face-Off on WGN Radio.